MacArthur. I will start with introductions. I'm Dave Favello, Chair from Walnut Creek.
Craig Hagman from Walnut Creek and on the board at UBC.
I'm Ricardo Vendia from Alameda.
I'm Greg from Berkeley, the Berkeley Bike Station.
Jason Meggs from Berkeley, also involved with the Bike Station.
Sarah Zayed from the BART Planning Department.
And Colin Hughes, doing some research for BART Planning Department this summer.
Kevin Franklin, Lieutenant Police Department, BART Police.
For Timothy BART, Bicycle Program Manager.
Mike Jones, a Caltrans planner, but here as a bike advocate today.
Scott Mace from Berkeley. I'm also recording this for podcast.
Okay, we'll move right into public communications for anything not on the agenda, if you want to speak about that. Seeing none, we'll move on to a recap of Bike to Work Week and what BART did.
What BART did? I wouldn't know I was on for this level. I thought you guys were going to report on what you guys did for the BART, but what did we do? We printed we did a promotion primarily for folding bikes this year. Emphasize that in all of our promotional materials because that's one way we have a capacity for people to come during the peak period. So we, our BART TV did a little video following, who was it, Sarah?
Charlize
on her commute to work using her folding bike, and they had that on our little BART TV, and We provided some t-shirts to all of the bike energizer stations that were at our stations, and we brought those over to REI. And then we did what we normally do, which is we put announcements on the DSS, the displays that are on the platforms announcing Bike to Work Day, and we did a BART Times article, so the whole month of May, the BART Times, which is our little newsletter that goes out, was featuring bicycle things. I don't have a lot of control over that. That's our marketing department, but they did that, and our webpage was featuring BART and bicycle themes. I believe that is the primary things. Was there anything else?
No, that was great.
Permits to the we had quite a few number of energizer stations. I think there were, I can't remember, larger than last year because I had to distribute the t-shirts. I think there were, I don't know, 18 maybe, something like that. There were quite a few.
That was the one thing I didn't know the exact number of the energizer stations. I was hoping Robert would be here and have the count. I didn't think Dave Campbell would be here.
I went around and looked at what was happening at a lot of the energizer stations. I went to Fruitvale and such, and MacArthur was, I got just a little report. They had not necessarily all everybody coming to BART, but they had, when I got there, they'd had almost 400 people at that energizer station, that one's right in the plaza. So that was very exciting and very good.
And question, were the t-shirts, the promoted folding bikes, given only to people that showed up at BART stations with folding bikes? That's what I noticed.
Well, that was the priority. That I was not strict about that. Because, you know, it's the energizer station, so I said, be sure and give priority to people who have folding bikes, but after that point, go ahead, of course, you know, give it to others. And we still have a few. And, oh, I know, there was one more thing that we did, which we haven't yet completed, I think it, because it's just June, but we did on the MyBART promotion, we did a drawing for, I believe, two or three, I'm not sure, folding bikes. So if you entered through the MyBART, you can enter into a drawing to get a folding bike.
So the people that staffed the energizer stations, those were not from BART.
Right, all
people
volunteers.
People that made a request to BART to be able to do those locations.
Right, right. It's basically a Dave Campbell of the Berkeley Friendly. He usually organizes the East Bay, he and Robert, and they usually put in for, and he's willing to help anybody even, you know, but put in, it's easier, they put in one single application that covers all, so you get a permit, because you need an expressive rights permit, and he does it, he does the one that covers all of them, just because it's easier, but you can still, you could do it individually as well.
Dave's the chair of the East Bay Bike Fellowship.
Oh, Dave is.
So I ended up with some t-shirts, Laura, from Wobo. Is that your doing?
Yes, Sarah and I, we gave some of the leftovers. Well, we stacked them up and gave them to the people who we knew were working.
Okay. I thought actually the design this year wasn't up to the usual high standard. In fact, it'd be nice actually, because the open sickle is free stuff, really. Mm-hmm. To charge, do a nice t-shirt every 2 years or so and charge for it.
Well,
be nice.
I have our graphic designer do them, and he's usually, I asked him to do a design that was a little bit edgy.
Yes.
And but we asked him kind of late in the game, so he didn't have a lot of time to really to work on it as much. And then we gave him the hard thing of doing something with folding bikes, so. But maybe next year we can, because I didn't know I was going to get to do that, but maybe next year, now that we're getting to do stuff.
Well, we'll make sure Wobo that those t-shirts get out,
okay.
Out on the street.
Good.
Okay, well that's quite a bit. A lot of emphasis on what Bike Park can do for commuters that travel during the peak times. We'll move on to the electronic locker project, and
okay, I don't have a lot to say on this one, except we have the retrofits are all out in the stations that they're going to go to. They've been moved and they're fixed up and they're working. They are waiting to get their new firmware installed and customized to be for BART. And we expect that to happen this week. So they will be able to be open for use very soon. The new quads, there was a slight, you know, as often happens, a little miscommunication between the fabricator and the manufacturer. Some little parts weren't made out of stainless steel that needed to be made out of stainless steel. So they are getting fixed, and we should basically see them out in the stations in the next 4 weeks. They're going to start coming in about a week or 2 weeks, and then the more of them are going to come in because they can, you know, they're going to be making them and putting them out with the contractor. And they are just aside, not part of our contract, but they are doing the testing of the reservation system out at Pleasant Hill, and that is getting good results. People are participating, and they expect to have some results in that in the fall.
So, you said that the firmware is somehow custom for BART?
No, they're updating the firmware for all of their... you know, just like if you get a Microsoft update, you know, they're doing that for everything, and they just finished that last Friday, so we didn't want to customize ours with the old firmware and then put in new firmware. So we were waiting now they're going to go and put the new firmware in, and with the little custom, there's a little, some customization to make for BART, which means says this is a BART locker, you know. This is the funding agencies, and it's 3 cents an hour.
Well, one thing that I think Mike will talk about, he's got his hand raised, with something that I thought that BART should know about, even though the locker that happened at was not an actual BART e-locker. So if you want to, I didn't print out the email from Stephen Grover, so
yeah.
If you want to
know about the,
yes.
The 19th Street.
Yes.
So. The question must be, I think those are being all retrofitted now with some sort of improvement. Where's that left your program?
Ours is good. Ours is in good stead. Basically, those people who don't know, the electronic lockers at 19th Street got broken into. There were pried the door jamb and the door, I believe. This is, I didn't see it, but this is the description. Enough to the point where they could get in and trigger, there is an emergency release inside the lockers in case someone gets in there and gets trapped or something. Usually the workers, the people who work on the lockers, are the ones who get trapped inside more than not. Stephen called me, actually left a message on my cell phone that weekend, so he was very proactive in terms of calling me, and that was very nice. They went out immediately. They were able to put in some extra structural pieces so that now, even if you pried it, distort it and stuff, you can't get around and get to that latch. That's my understanding. Our lockers were not to the point where basically they built that into the lockers we're getting, the new lockers. And our retrofit lockers are configured in such a way that that doesn't happen because of the way the retrofit kit fits in there. So I think Steven wants his product to be have a high integrity, so he worked pretty fast and hard to get it. And I think it was actually, I mean, it's not a good thing, but it's good that it happened before ours were finished being made and we could get the change built right in.
Yeah. I think his response has been very good. And I believe the person that had the bike stolen was happy with the solution. I've subsequently used those lockers, and I don't think it's a reason not to use them, even if they had to be broken. Things do get broken occasionally.
I
think that's a big issue. I mean, cars get broken into all the time. People still park their cars. But you lots get broken. But I think Stephen's had a pretty good job.
He did good. He also said the bike had been in the locker for 4 days. So when you do that, it does expose, you know, people can see it. They can go back, get their stuff together. They can really plan an attack a little longer, so... I would recommend if you're going to store your bike for a long period of time, maybe go to a bike station or something.
I was going to say that bike parking inside MacArthur, I think we talked about that last time. I was pleased to see that actually happened. It was somewhere where people put their bikes inside MacArthur while the lockers are changing.
Right.
And of course, I do hope that at one stage we will get carbon of bike parking inside MacArthur. It's happened twice now in my time I've been here. The Millennium Evening, there were bikes in the MacArthur station. Mine was the only one, because it was a last-minute deal by Robert Rabin. And now we have them there again. And it looks very pleasant. It fills that space up very nicely.
Yeah. We were able to get temporary racks, U-racks, on wooden runners placed in the MacArthur station.
I heard a similar request for exactly last year's reason in a command meeting I was at.
Yeah. That's right.
It's definitely the demand for that.
Yeah, but it's not like you go in there and just feel like you're swamped with bicycles or something.
Right.
There's a lot of empty space there. And we're working, of course, on those who haven't been here before, trying to get 19th and City Centre stations to get bikes in there, where again, there's just stacks of room for them. Sorry.
Okay, well, it's a little off the agenda item. I'll just close in saying something in the letter. Stephen mentioned that it was this small batch of lockers that didn't have this fail-safe from that type of attack, and he quickly addressed it and fixed them. And I just, the reason I wanted to mention it is to assure people that this has been addressed and the lockers are safe to park your bike in. And it probably isn't a good idea to leave them there for a long period just so that other people can use them. That's the whole idea of the e-lockers, is to increase the number of people that get the advantage of having a locker and a secure place to put your bike. Leave your light on it, your pannier, your toolkit, whatever, so you don't have to schlep all that stuff with you. And with that, we'll move on to next item on the agenda, bike theft and dead bike removal program.
I think we have some new people in the room.
Okay, let's hear from, we have three people come in.
I'm Rick Goldman, San Francisco representative of the task force.
I'm Gene Hope. I operate the Fruitvale bike station, and we're going to soon operate the Embarcadero and Berkeley stations as well.
And I'm Alan Lee with Bart. I work at Laura on the bicycle stations.
Did you
Oh, I'm Kenya Wheeler. I'm also with BART, and I'm a corporate lawyer. I work with planning issues or now bike access issues.
Okay. So how did the bike removal go for spring?
We also have our police force here to talk about bike theft. But the bike removal was, you know, set up to happen in April. I had a meeting to get that going. And when I called to find out how did it go, they said that they were, and we can go check on this, but they said they weren't able to, they didn't do the M line, which is the San Francisco line. And they were unable to get to the L line, which is the one that goes out to Dublin Pleasanton. They had felt that they had successfully completed the R and C lines, which is the C line goes out to Pittsburgh Bay, and the R line, the rest of the R line goes from Richmond to Fremont. Although, when I looked, I didn't bring this to share because I don't feel that it was a very successful tag and remove this time. They removed 14 bikes. And so I'm not sure I'm going to have to address it again to see if we can get a little better, a better response on that. I couldn't get more right now because of the fire and all the other things that have happened. The maintenance department is very busy, and you'd be surprised that, well, maybe you wouldn't be surprised, but there's a lot going on because of that. They're basically having to turn trains around at Bay Fair and setting up temporary little station facilities there and such. So,
would it help to have people report stations and locations of them for you to tally them when you do go out?
It would if I didn't get them reported to me individually, so that if you could have somebody here collect them, and then I could actually even give you a form, a thing with all the stations on there, and then that might be helpful. It might not be, though, just to let you know that if you see a bike and you think it's, what we're calling the dead bike or the abandoned bikes that need to be removed, it may be a bike that the police and the maintenance department feel is questionable, and they don't want to remove a bike that's somebody's bike. So what they would do is maybe tag it at this point. This last time, what they tried a new thing was, instead of tagging them, and they just removed they both went out together, police and maintenance together, and they just removed the most obvious. So if there was a borderline one, it wouldn't get removed. But.
Hey, Lieutenant Franklin, what do you have to
add? I'm sad to report that bikes are still being stolen at BART and at a rate that we're not satisfied with. But at this point, I don't have any bike theft statistics at the meeting tonight. Do you have any questions?
Have you ever caught any bike thieves at BART station?
Yeah, we do. Especially when people are keeping an eye out and report things, and we're able to respond to something in progress. And occasionally we even come upon them in progress, we find them in progress. But it's one of those things where, just like any crime, it's hit and miss. Sometimes you get them, sometimes you don't.
Well, that's good to hear. Maybe we could get some press, get a reporter out to report it.
Wouldn't you catch somebody? You could at least tell these guys.
Make an example of them, right?
No, I think it would be good to have that out there, just to let otherwise people see the parted out bikes at the stations, and they get the impression that nothing's being done.
Yeah, I get the impression that's a freebie that they can take more from any bike. And I guess that's part of the problem with tagging the bikes, too, is once they're tagged, it kind of makes it look to other people like, hey, maybe that bike is abandoned, I'm going to take parts off it. And then, it's a vicious cycle from that point.
We usually only tag the
the ones that are
right.
very Obviously. Clearly bad, and that the goal was to remove them within 3 weeks, but we know that that's not always been accomplished.
Right.
I heard that more than once that citizens frustrated with bicycle theft at BART thought about setting up some kind of a watch or putting, you know, radio devices in bikes or setting a video camera. And I wonder if BART police, if any citizen who's ever approached you, would BART police be available for a partnership?
We don't have any staffing now for special projects like that. I mean, it's the kind of thing where we could talk with our detectives and see if there was a detective working property crimes who might be able to, you know, fit that into a schedule. But our biggest problem that we have is just staffing. And as long as we've got crimes against persons going on, we're busy, you know, taking care of the robberies and stuff like that. The property crimes, whether it's a crime against a car or a crime against a bike, always get pushed down to a slightly lower level. So for us, it really comes down to a staffing thing. But if somebody approaches us and already has evidence, like, hey, here's a video of a theft that actually occurred, if there's something on there that we can identify, we certainly would use that. But I can't tell you that I could, like, assign a detective to work full-time with a group, saying, you know, setting up stings on bikes or something like that. But, you know, I mean, those things are always options. If someone's got a proposal, you can always bring it forward.
Yeah, I believe Portland just did, they just did bicycle theft baiting. They had, right. they were setting bicycles out and putting RFID tags on them, and they caught a number of
right.
Bike thieves.
Things like that are really popular, too, like during Christmas season when you get a lot of smash and grabs from cars and stealing of items out of cars. And so police department, isn't something we've done at BART. Police departments often do those kind of operations around the Christmas season. And, you know, I mean, it's not unheard of to do stuff like that. And it may even be the kind of thing that this task force could approach more of a regional thing with police departments. Because I guarantee you people who are stealing bikes at BART aren't just stealing them at BART. It's going to be more of a regional stolen property kind of problem. So it may not be just BART's problem to address, but if we can cooperate with other people, we may have some more resources to attack in that way.
Do you mean the city's police force?
Yeah, probably like a city.
The other thing about tagging bikes, I've seen it done where people tag every bike at a station, and then and it says these bikes, if your bike hasn't been taken away within 5 days or the tag's not off it. So any bikes left with tags after, say, a week. I mean, then I feel like at that point, at least if a thief was to walk up, or someone who was thinking about taking a bike, they see there's tags on all these bikes there. Not they know that a tag bike isn't necessarily abandoned.
When we tag the bikes, people get very upset.
Okay.
If it's a bike that's in use, and they get confused about why we would be tagging the bike. So I think that would be kind of unlikely. We really only tag bikes when they are illegally parked and particularly causing some kind of interference that, you know, a blind person or someone else might trip on, or if it really looks, and we have a definition of a bike that is an abandoned bike, which is basically, I think, three or more major working parts must not be available. So we have a fairly strict one, because that's the one thing that we've been able to do to get past the whole thing of lost property. If it's a question that it may be a piece of lost property, then we have to go through a whole nother process of logging it, keeping it for a number of days, and then selling it at auction. And so we were able to make a definition that got us to a point where we can actually remove the dead bikes, which has taken me about 6 years. So I need to, like, stick with this. And I know that we didn't do a great job here, but I think the best thing to do is try to, you know, maybe with your feedback that, no, the bikes didn't get removed, this would be a good time to get the feedback on how many at what stations are still out there to kind of get an indication. Because, like, on this example, there's a station that says they didn't remove, they removed zero bikes at that station, and I have a strong feeling that that is unlikely, that there would be zero dead bikes at this station.
Mike?
Yeah,
From Laura's previous statistics she gave us, it works out that if you leave your bike daily at the BART station, on average, you will get it stolen or irreparably vandalized, guaranteed, by the end of the year. There's 500 bikes stolen officially.
There were approximately 500 bikes. I didn't get these. I got these from you guys. Approximately 500 bikes stolen in an annual period from BART.
Yeah, that's officially stolen, taken away, and excludes the vandalized. So it's a very high number for your regular commuter. Your bike is going to be stolen probably, or vandalized.
Do we know how many bikes are parked at BART?
1,000 was the figure Laura gave us last time.
We only have 1,000 bikes a year parked at BART?
Daily.
Daily.
Right. Daily. Anyway, the point being, it's quite a big thing is what I'm trying to emphasize. But the next thing is ask you is, what about officer education? Clearly, a lot of these people are losing their bikes because they're just not locking them correctly. If you lock your bike well, you're probably not going to get it stolen, the truth is. So some people aren't doing it. Would it be helpful for officers to be given a little bit of classroom exercise on how the lockers work, what they're about, how people can lock their bikes? You're saying that you're very busy, and I understand that. But this is perhaps a small task that they could just see as they're walking through a station. They could just see someone, walk over and say, excuse me, you've actually locked your bike incorrectly. Excuse me, there's a locker here. I know about it. I assume now they probably don't. And I'm thinking that if they just have a little time on their hands, it's not, I'm saying, a special duty, but just walking through the station, if they could offer that advice, that'd be quite useful. I don't know what your opinion is on that.
It's not a bad idea. You know, I mean, we have a lot of mandated training that we have to do.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I mean, it comes down to a time thing. How much, you know, can you fit into a day when you're going to give the guys training? If there's something that you guys have that we could bring back and distribute and do like lineup training or something like that, it's not a bad idea. I mean, these guys would rather talk to people ahead of a crime happening than after a crime happening, you know. And so if we can prevent something through that, not a bad idea.
There could be signage that would be effective at that, and educating people as well. Created.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it works both ways. We've got to educate the users.
Right.
But we've got an officer here, so I'm talking now about that.
Yeah.
And I think we could probably. I mean, there are courses that the bike coalitions do courses on bike safety. That would probably be a very big commitment. I think it might be somewhere.
Well, I mean, you guys could host one, and we could give you, like, work on getting some kind of permit or something to, you know, do something like that. We don't have the staff to, like, host it, but, you know, that might
be. Maybe we could just add into some existing training. It wouldn't take long. I mean, this is not a big thing.
Right.
But just, I think, like most of us, if you're actually told, hey, this is a bike locker, this is how it works, suddenly you've got a vested interest in it.
Right.
This is how people lock their bikes, this is why they're stolen. I agree, it's not going to be your number one priority, but
something that you can give to the police department to present at a lineup, because we do a daily lineup for all our shifts, and you know, something that's in writing we can give to our sergeants that they would present to their officers
like
in a lineup
for sure.
Is not that difficult to do. So, you know, I mean, those are the kind of things that would work for us. If you're thinking about a class for people to go to, that's difficult. You know, actually finding time to schedule people where they're not going to be doing patrol, that stuff. It's very difficult to do. But lineup, we already got their attention for the time we've got them there. And if you've got some training material we can present, we can definitely do stuff like that.
Okay.
Mike's new, and he might not have been aware of some of the things we've talked about before. I've realized the police offices are very busy with other crimes and things, patrols. But I'm going to get this wrong. The TSAs, they're not...
I mean, the CSOs.
CSOs, yeah. The ticket the cars in the station for the, you know, parking before the 10 o'clock when the space is free up and you haven't put your dollar in or $5, that they have some free time after that.
Right.
And they might be the ones...
We are using them for, like, patrols around stations. They do. They ride trains. They go around stations. And we do give them direction to keep an eye out for bike theft. That's... come from, I know, previous meetings with Lieutenant Schultz being here and passing that word along. So yeah, that's definitely something that they still do. And they're kind of like our eyes and ears when they're out there. They're not cops, but they've got radios and they know what to look for. So we are still using them for those kind of activities.
Okay, good. It's good to hear Lieutenant Schultz is on that, because that was his idea to use them, because they seem to have more free time and be in the position to do some good. And my, I've been after BART to get another brochure specifically targeted at how to lock your bike, or like the BART, Bikes on BART, Breaking Away with Bikes on BART brochure that was 10 years ago. That brochure could be at the stations, or right, some kind of presentation could be on the website, or linking to one of the many places online that there are very nice YouTube videos of how to lock your bike. I mean, I know the San Francisco and the East Bay Bike Coalition have good information, or the Oakland City website has good information on how to lock your bike properly and not be just sitting duck for that.
I think with that, Dave, is that there's a certain, like, we're coming around to a new fiscal year, and there's a certain amount of money to spend on projects. And so if that, you know, I think you guys should think about what you want, you know, are your priorities. And, you know, so what I've been told is, you know, there's to print up, you know, design and print up a brochure, there's a cost. And I don't want to say what the cost is right now, because I've been kind of, I haven't looked at it recently or anything, but it wasn't small. So if that's your, what you want, then, you know, we definitely, you can put together, we should put together a, say, this is what we want to do this year. We want to spend, you know, $5,000 on Bike to Work Day and $25,000 on a brochure, and that's it, you know, kind of thing. Or, you know, I mean, or maybe it could go on and be bigger, and then we'll say, well, we have this much, and it'll get cut off here. But I think that would be the next step. Because if, what happens is it doesn't get past this. That's why I'm trying to help it get past, if that's your priority.
Are the BART TV videos or the website something that would come to a project level, or was that something that could be fit into the normal budget of
the department?
The BART
TV videos are generally done with no cost to the program. They've been very good about doing that, and in fact they've set it up now so that there's a whole BART bike section, so you can go and click bike and you get all of the videos they've made for bikes, because I think they did one for the Stair Channel, remember? But then it was so long ago it kind of fell down to the bottom of the heap and you didn't see it anymore. And so now you go on to that, I think it has a little sub flag that you can go on, and it'll open up the six videos that are regarding. Of course, the one that's around Bike to Work Day, that's more time, you know, it's only around that Bike to Work Day, so it'll, so, but there are certain things, well, you know, we can identify, certain things would be no cost, and some things would be cost.
Well, perhaps we can concentrate on the no-cost ones first and then check our priorities as to
I could just finish off. I mean, I've raised the point, how many bikes are stolen? I mean, I'm not sure what the fee is for cars, but I don't think it's as much as, like, if you would drive your car and park it at BART every day of the year, or every working day, you will lose your car.
Yeah, well, if you're getting 500 bikes a year stolen, but you're getting 1,000 a day parked,
yeah,
even that number isn't adding up to your guaranteed to get your bike stolen.
Well, that was literally, so it's 1,000 bikes, so half of them definitely are stolen.
No, well, that's 1,000 a day.
Yeah, but over a year, if you park your bike for a whole year.
500
so
in a year.
One.
But
yeah, so the two are yeah, yeah, he's saying it's basically two a day. The 500 a year is about one and a half a
but
day.
But what
yeah,
we see is most, so there's only a certain percentage of new people who are coming. So a lot of the people who are parking at the stations every day have parked there repeatedly. So that 1,000 doesn't exactly equal 1,000 people, but it doesn't equal 40,000 people. It equals probably, you know, how many humans it actually equals, it's hard to tell, but maybe it equals, you know, 7,000 people. So, you know, I mean, that's a figure. I mean, I'm just threw that out there. That's not scientific, but it's some ratio of bike numbers of humans who are biking to BART to the theft, and it is fairly high. But, you know, in terms of, because you've got so many people, a lot of the bicycles are repeating coming. You know, they're coming maybe, you know.
You don't just park once at BART,
you
park there daily.
Right.
And the 500 figure from Laura, which you got from yourselves originally, was completely stolen bikes, taken away,
and reported. So it wasn't excluding vandalized bikes, it was excluding bikes that had been reported.
Yeah.
But you're making too much of a leap if you're going to say that you're guaranteed to get your bike stolen in a year if you park there every day.
The thing with bike theft and any sort of theft like this, I assume, you reach a certain level where security can suddenly kick in. You can spend a fortune on security and nothing happens, and then suddenly a point is reached at which security has a massive effect. So what I'm going to say there is experimenting with brochures, experimenting with police officers, a little bit of training. It may or may not make the difference. It's hard to predict which one will actually cut through. But I do think we've got a serious problem here.
We have some work to do, obviously, and I think that we should go for the low-cost ones that are easy to implement, and again, look at our priorities for the cost ones and work on that. We heard about the electronic lockers, and to keep on time on the agenda, we'll move over to the bike stations.
Jason might have a while.
Oh, I'm sorry, Jason.
Probably 10 things to say, though. Regarding the 500 a year, it's important to remember that many people don't actually make a report when their bike is stolen. So undoubtedly, the number of bicycles stolen is much higher than 500 a year. And one of the reasons bike theft is so important, it's more than just the value of the bike. It's the fact that many people say the reason they aren't bicycling is that they couldn't keep a bike. After they've had one stolen and another stolen, they stop bicycling. So that's part of why I would say that bike theft is so important. We know that BART stations are a number one place where bike theft occurs. So one idea I would have is you mentioned the CSOs. I wonder if they could do anything proactive. They should get a training if that's something that would be within their job description, that they could do outreach. At the bike station in Berkeley, one thing we did was make a little flyer that had and the BFEC did this, where you could check off a number of things if you identified that the bike was improperly locked and at risk for being stolen, or any part was at risk for being stolen. You put your name, it would have a contact number, you check this and this, and then we'd fold them and wrap them so that you couldn't read it. It's just a white slip of paper on the handlebar. That's one idea that might be cheaper than a brochure, kind of direct marketing to the parkers. And maybe CSOs would be able to put those on bikes. I don't know, that might help. Because a lot of it is, as you say, a problem with people not knowing. You know, they're making mistakes. And unfortunately, as a society, we aren't teaching people. They should be learning it in, you know, kindergarten or something, but they aren't. So thanks, that's my two plus cents on that.
Those are some good ideas. I like the wrapping thing where it's not visible to where it's advertising what's wrong with the bike. It'll just be a curiosity when the rider comes back and they'll peel it off. That was one concern with that idea before. So now the bike station's probably the most secure place to leave your bike in the BART system. There's a new operating contract. Is this for you? Sarah, are you taking this, or?
Alan.
Okay, I'm sorry.
We actually tried to add another item to the agenda, but we're hoping to also discuss separately the bike station experience. After this item.
This was meant for bike station items. Okay. Yes, that'll be fine.
Yeah, first of all, I'm very pleased to announce that we went to the board last month, and we got a new bike vendor, actually our existing bike vendor at Fruitvale. Alameda Bike. Gino is the president of Alameda Bike. And they run the Alameda Bike Station, or the Fruitvale Bike Station, for the last 3 years. They're a very good job. I'm very pleased with them. And we're pleased they're going to be the bicycle manager for all three bicycle facilities that we have: Barcadero, Fruitvale, and of course Berkeley. And we're going to try to start the contract July 1st. And we hope to have some. I look forward to a successful contract. Gene introduced himself and tell us a little about what he's done. Gene?
Sure. I know a few of you already by face, either coming to the bike shops or some meetings, so I appreciate seeing you guys again. So we've been operating the Fruitvale bike station from November 2004 on, so about 3.5 years now. Something that I'm personally very proud to be a part of, to really provide access to bike commuters, and, you know, doing it in a level that is free and also supervised, and having the comfort of bike repairs at the same time, doing it in a way that's affordable, or at least somewhat affordable for BART. Very proud to say that in the 3.5 years, we have achieved our goals. We wanted to really find a way to provide above service or service greater than what was required at the same cost as a comparable bike station. So very proud to say that in the 3.5 years, we were able to get down in terms of our costs comparable to the Berkeley station while having 2 full-time staff mechanics and 2 part-time valets every single day. So we were able to do that with a different business model, really supplementing our expenses with repairs. And we were very, very, very proud to say that we were able to create that model and make it work. So as we are expanding to the other 2 stations, we're hoping to adopt that model into the other stations as well. Embarcadero, of course, being a special circumstance because it's such a small station, we're probably going to adopt a smaller scale for that one. But Berkeley, obviously, you know, being the biggest station of all of them, and that's, I mean, it's pretty amazing, really, what Berkeley's able to do with such a small space, with such a confined space at that, and yet providing so much service and bike parking on a daily basis. It's really quite amazing. If you guys have not been to the Berkeley station, I highly encourage you to be there. It's quite amazing to see that cage full and see the bikes locked on the outside.
It's still the leader, I believe. I don't know. We can look into that if it's still the leader nationally. But for quite some time, it was the first and the biggest and parked the most bikes. So I don't know. Now we're getting we have them in Chicago and other places. So
just to chime in, we're parking on average 80 bikes a day before the students left. So
very good.
That's pretty amazing.
And sometimes more, sometimes
yeah,
up to 100.
Yeah. What's it now with the students gone?
It's back down to a manageable level of about 60 to 70.
Still, it's important to also mention that Bike Station Berkeley doesn't advertise and has had to put policies in place to discourage people from parking there just because it's not big enough. So it really, really needs to expand.
It's very
it has tremendous potential.
It's capacity is what, 77?
Technically 77.
You're averaging 80 a day.
It's held, it's held over 100 bikes.
Well, plus that doesn't include the rack, right, that's outside.
That doesn't include the rack, yeah.
When it's at full, because there's, we had to constrict the hours, so then because of costs and everything, and so then we put the rack, which operations was nice enough to let us put the rack next to it, and that I think we did that when you were there, didn't we?
Yes,
got the rack in.
And took great pains to develop policies to remove the bikes that were blocking bike parking. We've been there.
Yeah, they still
years.
Pop up.
Yeah, so and we equally see the potential in Berkeley. Given the amazing amount of bikes that are parked there on a daily basis with such minimal resources, we really feel as though translating our business model into Berkeley with the staff and also the demand already being there really can create, I think, a much better service to those who are parking in terms of really having a quicker speed, having a more full service mechanics. While also providing, you know, obviously the revenues, making sense so that BART can fund us on an annual basis and really us having the security to know that this will be around for decades to come, not necessarily years to come. And so that's the potential that we see. To kind of give it an idea of what we do at Alameda Bicycle and Fruitvale, we firmly believe in the idea of having a sustainable model where mechanics can create a career out of this. So at Alameda and Fruitvale, like all of our full-time staff get full medical, dental, and vision benefits. They get vacation pay, sick pay, and they get profit-sharing incentives so that, again, with the same resources that we are getting from BART compared to Berkeley, we're able to provide our staff a tremendous amount of benefits, a livable pay for the Bay Area, cost of living, and, you know, again, provide much better service to our clients. So we hope that we're able to retain as many of the Berkeley staff as we can and really kind of figure out what their goals are and make sure that it meshes with our goals and you know, make sure that this is going to, you know, again, last for decades. So our model is it got a little change today. We figured out that the goal is for us to begin July 1, which is a bit more of a challenge than expecting. Yeah. Which is, yeah, definitely a different challenge from expecting to begin maybe around December or November, January. So we are currently, we're trying to get a further extension to see if we could start Berkeley later. But if we cannot, then obviously we're going to work very aggressively with the current staff to see who wants to stay, what hours they want, and hopefully retain as many as we can and really make this a long-term goal for everyone. So that's where we're at. I unfortunately have to leave after this portion, so I guess if there's any questions, I'd love to answer them.
Is the market at our station going to become an attendance station also?
You know, that's going to depend a lot on what BART's goals are. The challenge, of course, is making it a sustainable model. Because to be fully attended at all times, of course, takes more resources from BART. And we need to figure out if the station can sustain that or not. Meaning, if we're taking in an additional, you know, 8 hours of service per day, you're talking 40 hours per week, and now you're talking about, you know, $500, $600 in wages per week. You know, because, for us, we don't want to do business if I can't give full medical dental vision. I don't want to be in that business if I have to give a guy $9 an hour. So there's certain standards that I have in regards to my staff. So we're talking $500 additional per week. Where's that money going to come from? BART's already tapped, so if I can't make it work through the model that we've established in terms of repairs and having it supplemented that way, then we really can't do it. So I really can't answer that right now, but definitely I'm going to go in there. My goal, to be honest, is to not change a thing for a few months.
Because that's the model, right, that we've set up, is that if they start...
They start existing
at the
right
existing
now.
Hours.
We'll be looking at it at Embarcadero, since it actually has the lowest of any of the three bike stations utilization. And we're looking at basically automating that as much as possible. That would include a new security camera, a new lock, an electronic lock. That's going to take time to get rolling.
I think, though, the current situation is that we are going to stay with the number of hours at each of the three stations until Gene can kind of really see and get going with it, and then he has some flexibility built into the contract to shift, you know, people and things around, because we wanted to give whoever got the contract that kind of flexibility so that they can build a, you know, model up that works. So that's the idea.
Scott.
Yeah, at one time, the bicycle-friendly coalition in Berkeley had a series of loaner bikes and trailers in the Berkeley bike station. Is that still true, and will that change under the new management?
It's still true. We have a trailer available. You ask the day before, and we can get it to you. And we have three loaner bikes that are kept in shape at all times by the mechanics. We did have issues with the loaner bike program, but we just needed to be more strict with it. People were going off with bikes for weeks at a time, not coming back and checking them back in. And so we stopped that. But they are still available for members for... it's mainly that if you're a member, like, then you're usually dedicated to bicycle stuff. And you have, like, a family friend that comes to town and you want to go biking. That's what it's really made for. So, and we might expand it to something else.
Yeah, to answer your question in regards to what I'd like to do, I mean, I personally would love to have 10 rental bikes per station and really make that part of the city culture, to know that, you know, if you want to learn how to, you know, to see the city on a bicycle, you know, you go to these stations. The constraint, of course, is space, you know, because Berkeley, for example, even Brookville, we're running out of space. So to even have, you know, space allotted for 10 rental bikes means that there's going to be 10 less space to park. So, you know, Sarah's going to create some magic for us in Berkeley, so we could hopefully change that, but that's always a constraint. So to answer your question, you know, I don't know if we're going to be able to expand that from what we have now, but I would hate to lose something that's already established and successful. So I'm trying not to change really as little as I need to, because Berkeley's already successful and doing its thing, so there's no need to change anything that's already working.
And just one last thing to verify. Embarcadero will still have the same staffed hours.
Right. It will still have the same staffed hours. That's the minimum. So to latch on to Ricardo's question, I would love to have it, you know, expanded hour-wise. again, the constraint is, can we make it work affordably? Because the one thing I definitely do not want to do is have to ask BART for more money, knowing that BART has their own struggles even getting the resources. And, you know, quite honestly, you know, knowing that my big picture is I'd love to have, you know, a bike station in every station. But if we're going to have that dream happen, the only way BART can do that is if they can show that the cost per parked bike is lower and lower and lower every year. So that's always a challenge. So my personal goal is, can I increase the client's satisfaction? Meaning, can I get it parked quicker? Can I get their service done quicker? Can I get the repairs done quicker? At the same time, can I get the cost lower every single year? If I could do both of those things, then we're successful. Because then we can go back to BART and say, we give you the data, can you do your thing now? And you know, find more money, because we're showing that the cost per parked bike is getting lower. So the equation of service at the same time, the equation of you know, funding really is the challenge that I'm trying to work with.
Well, you and Alameda Bikes have done a great job with Fruitvale, so I'm looking and hoping that you can bring that out to the other two bike stations and make it work.
Yeah, and from what I know, Berkeley already has a very successful outfit, so we really want to talk with the staff as soon as we can, really, to brainstorm what their dreams are, because you guys are working there every day, so you know, they definitely have a lot more, not only ideas, but you know, frustrations. So we want to hear those things and really figure out how to knock those out before we even consider dreaming even more.
And in all fairness to Gene, he just kind of got the word recently that, okay, it's a go. And because of our procurement process, we couldn't, you know, give him the open rein to start talking to people until recently. And we, the other advantage I think we have is, by having all three under one management, we can maybe build a little more energy, a little more, consistency, and really, I think it'll be helpful instead of three different managers. I'm really looking forward to it.
One more thing, or Ricardo first.
I just wanted to make a comment. It's not really a question. I think that one of the benefits of, I use the bike station, one of the benefits I see of it, besides the fact that you have the mechanics there, is I think there's a lot of people that are making safer rides home because you have a mechanic that's handing you over your bike and might make a comment or two about, hey, are you aware about this on your bike? So, I mean, I just think it's a great concept, and the idea that, you know, if you've got a problem with your bike or, you know, whatever, whether it's low air or something, problem with gears or whatever, I just think it's really great that you have somebody there that can help you out and make your trip home and safer.
Thank you. Yeah, part of the model, of course, is the model itself, you know, having it so that more revenues means more people with a staff. Part of it is also in terms of the culture. I mean, you really got to take care of your people. And if you don't take care of the staff, they're not going to have the motivation to let someone know you have 30 pounds of pressure on your tire. But yeah, that's exactly right. We really feel as though the hardcore commuter is going to commute no matter what. What we want to penetrate are the guys that drive their car every day and maybe ride their bike twice a year. Because if those guys can learn to commute, that's where you're really going to create change in the world, really. So those mechanics, and having those mechanics there that are trained and motivated, that's the key. Because then that's the key to really get those casual commuters to become hardcore commuters. That's where change can really happen. So yeah, we believe in that for sure.
Okay,
isn't there some discussion of trying to get a street level location that would offer you more business visibility?
That's the segue to Sarah with the expansion of Berkeley.
Yeah, so the city and BART are currently collaborating to develop the downtown Berkeley bike station expansion plan. Right now, just as a little bit of background, the city has a grant for about almost $500,000 to expand the existing facility. That grant was awarded in 2005 and is set to expire soon. So we are working with the city to come up with a design concept and location, a funding plan and schedule, and a plan for implementing the grant and managing this expansion project. It's really critical that our plan must really elicit the full support of the city and BART and community stakeholders. Because of the tight timeline in particular, we are moving forward and hoping to set the lead with the grant agency by the end of this month.
Meeting with who, I'm sorry?
The grant agency, which is, it's a regional Measure 2 funded project, so TALC is the managing agency on that.
Just as a little bit more background, we did a economic analysis for the facility expansion, and it concluded that a street level bike station really presents a stronger business model with higher chances of success than expanding on the concourse level. The analysis suggests that high volume commuter oriented sales, potentially like a coffee shop, newsstand, cafe style sales model would really offer the greatest opportunity to reduce subsidy required for operational bike stations.
And also serve more.
Right. The above ground bike station will serve visitors and employees in the downtown area, and we will finally be able to market it to our existing customers at North Berkeley and Ashby BART, many of whom we know live closer to downtown Berkeley but drive to those stations because they have parking available. So, the Berkeley Bike Station was our first bicycle valet facility in BART, and it's always been oversubscribed and undermarketed. So we're really excited about this project. And I wanted to just pass out a few pictures. We're currently considering a site in downtown Berkeley, just north of Jupiter's. So it's on Shattuck. It's called The Spot. And it's directly across from the BART Rotunda. So if you can imagine it, just south of GNC and north of Jupiter's. But I'll pass around some photos of the site just for people's information. And then also some of the conceptual plans that were created for an expanded facility. These plans are out of date, and the cost estimate's out of date, but we're currently updating these.
I think they saw these.
Probably, they saw these years ago. I think that you all meet every other month, right?
So yes, next meeting is August.
So I think at that point we'll be ready. We'll have some more like schematic design, we hope. Right now we're working with Gene, with the Bicycle Friendly Berkeley Coalition, and with other potential partners. The new space is huge. It's 4,300 square feet. So we are looking at room for probably around 250 to 300 bike parking spaces, and then there'd still be a large amount of square footage available for programming.
That's a good expression.
Programming additional facilities.
What was the space again?
250 to 300. And interestingly, I mean, it might have been a little bit, an overestimate, but our economic analysis developed a demand methodology using looking at existing bike parking facilities in California, local and national data on bike trips to transit, transit route patronage data, and census data. And they actually estimated that an expanded bike station at street level could attract a base of 373 users. So that was like about their middle estimate. I think they had like a worst case scenario and a higher end scenario, but we are trying to get as many bikes as we can in the expanded facility. And really working a lot on the funding plan right now to be sure that we have our cost, a good handle on what the cost will be, and we're working within the 5 years to bring it back to around the current subsidy.
Do you anticipate costs will still be free, or will there be a charge, no charge still?
I mean, there may be some membership opportunities, just like at other bike stations where for fee you get extra services, but we're committed to making
So this is a Safe Route to Transit project?
Yes.
So the sponsors are TALC and the East Bay Bike Coalition.
Is that right?
Yes. Just to see if we do some work, or Robert does anyway.
The City of Berkeley would like to transfer the grant to BART to implement this project, so if that may happen in the next couple of months, and we'd be happy to come back to the committee with whenever we have more detailed designs.
We'd love to hear more good news. Thank you, Sarah.
I apologize. I have to
head out, got a newborn and a sick mother, so. But thank you for your time. Appreciate it.
Okay.
Thank you.
Or did it go around?
That one came around this way.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Nice.
And I'll just mention if Lieutenant Franklin, if you don't necessarily have to stay here if you have other pressing duties, or Alan, if you're welcome to, but if you have somebody to get home to or calls or anything. So next item on the agenda would be the bike and pedestrian wayfinding at MacArthur BART.
Yeah, and I have Kenya Wheeler here, who is the planner for MacArthur, and we've been working on a number of things with the city. We just met today, and I only printed out one color copy, but you can look at the color copy and then take a black and white of the bicycle signage. Just know that really it's going to be primarily the A and B were preliminary. Those are no longer really on the table anymore, and it's more going to be the other variation. So pass it around. Mm-hmm. You can take yours. It basically just shows that it's green. And Kenya, you want to
do your best in that, please.
Because you
want to
go ahead and talk about it?
Sure. So this is also a Safe House to Transit funded project. The bicycle and pedestrian wayfinding component is a smaller portion of a larger infrastructure project to improve access to MacArthur BART. The major component, as many of you may be aware, is constructing bicycle lanes along 40th Street between Martin Luther King Jr. Way and Telegraph Avenue, and also as well as providing a new traffic signal at the BART entry road in 40th Street for allowing for vehicles and shuttles to have a signalized intersection at that location. And there's also bulb outs for pedestrians that are being constructed, under construction now at the intersection of Telegraph and 40th Street to shorten the pedestrian crossing distance and to provide for expanding waiting area for bus patrons. So there's a series of improvements to help bicycles and pedestrians. So at the station. For in terms of the wayfinding piece here, so as I mentioned, one of the main elements we wanted to do was to provide directions from all four quadrants surrounding MacArthur BART, both from east and west, from Emeryville, Piedmont Avenue areas, as well as from Berkeley and from the Pill Hill area of Oakland into the station. And as a corollary to this effort, there was also a study that was done by the City of Oakland that looked at what would be the sort of most appropriate bike routes into the station area. And that study determined that it's actually feasible to put bike lanes on 40th Street west of the station to Emeryville, and then east of the BART station up to Webster, so that there would be a direct connection from the Webster bikeway to BART, and then as well as from the BART station into Emeryville. With Webster being the north-south route. There's the issue about Telegraph Avenue bike lanes is still being deferred because of the AC Transit bus rapid transit project, which would, as you know, may take a lane from a travel lane away. So that would potentially create a conflict with vehicle traffic. In terms of the pedestrian wayfinding element, so you see here, these are the bicycle signs. You'll also be installing pedestrian signs that would be approximately 18 inches by a foot and a half in vertical height by 28 inches, and that would provide directions from these four quadrants, north, south, east, and west of the station to key activity centers, so that if you're walking or even if you're biking from the station, you would be able to get some visual indication on how you would reach destinations like Kaiser Hospital or the Temescal District. So it's really designed to help orient new users, visitors to the area, to local destinations that they can reach quickly by walking or by cycling.
And then a station area map of that will have the bike routes as well as the pedestrian destinations on it at the station, so you can orient yourself at the station a little better, maybe out in the plaza, depending on. There is a lot of work that's going to be happening at the plaza, as well as the parking lot area is
going to be developed into a housing mixed-use kind of development, right?
Right, yeah. So there's one of the reasons why we got this grant and so much activity at MacArthur Bar is Bar actually is, has an exclusive negotiation agreement with a developer. It's a team of Build Housing, which is a nonprofit housing developer. Actually, they're a for-profit housing developer. They're affiliated with Bridge Housing, and Bridge is a nonprofit development firm out of San Francisco that does affordable housing. And they're proposing to build, along with another firm, McGrath Properties, a 624-unit housing complex with about 40,000 square feet of retail space on the existing Bar parking lot. And so the subterranean parking lot that's there now will be filled in. There would be parking on that lower level for the residences that would be built on top of the lot. And then there would be developments up to 5 stories in height on the parking lot itself. We would build a replacement parking garage at the south end of the station, basically along the West MacArthur end of the Bar station. And there's several hotel properties there now. They're like sort of hourly hotels that not the best places to stay.
Motel.
Yeah, motels, right, exactly. Hotels are giving them way too much credence. But those uses would actually be the Oakland Redevelopment Agency would be purchasing those properties and then turning that land over to the developer to the provide for a space for the replacement parking for BART. And one of the things we are planning to do here is actually a test of a policy that the planning department worked and developed several years ago and actually got the board to approve as part of our system-wide TOD policy, or transit-oriented development policy. And that is sort of it's first for BART and really I think for the nation, where we are now planning it on a case-by-case basis to not always replace parking lots when development occurs at a station on a one-to-one basis. So at MacArthur, we're looking at replacing anywhere from 50 to 75% of the parking spaces, but in any case, there would be a net reduction of parking at the station, which makes the access for bicycles, parking for bicycles, and access for pedestrians even more critical at this station. We did a survey in 2006 and found that actually of all the patrons that use MacArthur BART, only 10% actually drive to the station. Most of the patrons are walking, biking, or using shuttles, transit, both AC Transit and the Emory Go-Round. In fact, Emory Go-Round was 50% of all the transit riders use the Emory Go-Round, which is the free shuttle to Emoryville. And this station actually had, as you may have heard, the highest bike access mode share of any station that we've seen. We're based on our survey data, 8% of all patrons are biking to the station. And we've just completed a system-wide station profile study, which is a larger survey for the entire system to identify where people, how they're getting to BART stations. And so we have some updated data from that effort late summer, which I'm sure Laura will bring back to this task force. So that project, the Transit-Oriented Development Village, has also secured a $1 million grant from, I guess, the federal government that would provide for a reconstructed BART Plaza. So the entryway right now where you come into the station where there's those great seal sculptures and there's a hot dog cart.
All the racks.
That would actually be reconstructed. We would provide for new pavement, a new area for bike, for the e-lockers, improved lighting to make it more visible and safer. And we're looking at options to also provide some type of high-capacity bicycle facility that may or may not be staffed, either in the plaza area itself or potentially in the development. So it could be a fully staffed bike station, or it could be something in between where it's more like Embarcadero, where it's a secured, electronically secured station, or some mix of that. So we are working with the City of Oakland. City of Oakland actually is going to be having a hearing on Wednesday night, this Wednesday, at the Oakland Planning Commission for the approval of entitlements for this project. And I went to a previous Planning Commission meeting, and the Planning Commissioners are already aware of the importance of bicycle access to the station. In fact, several of them expressed the need that the project conditions need to include a requirement that the developer work with BART in the city to provide a high-capacity bicycle facility. So that's going to be definitely something that BART supports and that we will be working with the developer in the city to make happen here. Just one other thing I wanted to mention. There was another first for BART. We completed what we call an access feasibility study. I've got a copy here I can pass around. It's a rather lengthy document. It's 182 pages, so you might not not necessarily light reading, but this was our first attempt to look at access issues at a BART station in relation to a new development, a transit-oriented development at a station. And so we looked at all the modes of access you could imagine at a service station, both not just autos, but bicycle access, pedestrian access, taxis, We didn't have Segway in here. Actually, I guess not almost all the modes of access. Not skate or skateboards. But this sort of compendium of data looked at ways to provide what I think actually a term that Alan coined, better units of access to the station. So instead of looking at maintaining ridership by providing parking spaces, how can we provide equivalents of access through other modes, like maybe it's more bicycle parking, maybe it's better pedestrian facilities, so that we would maintain and increase ridership from development occurring at a station where we remove new parking spaces. So there's several tiers of improvements, low cost and high cost options to supplement providing more parking with providing provisions for alternative modes such as biking, such as walking, using transit to access MacArthur Park. This is available on our website. If you go to bart.gov/planning, under the, it's a little confusing, but under the Alameda County page, there's a link for MacArthur Park project information, and there's a link for the PDF of this file. Or I can pass out my card and you can email me. I'll just send that to you as well. But I'll pass this around if folks are interested in looking at it. Is there anything else you want to do?
Any
questions?
When are you? Is the goal to put these signs in?
Well,
these signs. The signs are the smallest part of the
thing. Right, right.
The
right.
Goal is to have them in by December, because once again, our grant. We have been actually struggling quite a bit with the city of Oakland to get to some kind of sign that they would agree upon. We tried to originally do a combination of bike and ped signage that was kind of more universal bike, ped, you know, something that was, but that was not to be. So because they are developing their own signage and they still don't have their bike signage really nailed down, this is at least their existing bike signage, and this is how we would go with it. So we kind of gotten a tentative blessing on this. Their engineer looked at it. It's not gone through the full stamp of approval, but it looks very close to what we could do. And now, you know, if we can move pretty quickly, we'll try to get them actually in. So
in Berkeley, would we see purple versions of these?
We don't know. This is part of our ongoing problem. Every city you got to deal with. So
you're thinking of the model, models we talked about today, a lot of following on from what cities do. So
yeah.
It won't be a regional standard.
Right.
It's going to be a local standard adopted.
Right. But what we'd like to see is something that at least has the BART consistency, so we don't get a purple BART logo and a green BART logo and a red BART logo. We get like at least the BART logo kind of looks at least similar, or black and white would be okay.
Are these all to scale?
I think they're, well, I don't know.
It says 1 foot, 1 inch, 1 foot. So it gives the impression of scale. Well, that makes this bicycle L.
The signs are very high. They would, the bottom of any sign would not be lower than 7 feet.
That's good to know, because my comments were going to precipitate around how this little BART logo is a perfect size for slapping a shipping label with a tag on it over it. So
yeah,
I was going to say the bigger one would be, the biggest one you have would probably be the best. But if they're up above,
I believe it's probably 2-inch
ladders.
Yeah.
Right.
Probably
be 88. Yeah, exactly. And that's one of the concerns the city of Oakland had. And actually, that issue about people slapping stickers and graffiti has caused some
problems,
issues with other signage programs. You know,
see it everywhere you go.
Yeah.
We have some lovely signs in Berkeley, the bike station, that don't look so good anymore.
Yeah, I've actually noticed that. Right? Are there any other questions?
Just one quick question. Which was the one, like, the ones they were likely to go with, C or D, for the city of Oakland on this sheet?
I think it's really the D sign.
The one that's, like, the likely.
They have some C out there that we would use, you know, if we wanted to marry our sign to it, you know. But they're going to be going more with D at this time, and so.
Okay, I just wanted to mark that on mine. And I'll just mention that Contra Costa County is redoing their bike and pedestrian plan, and one of the things in it is for consistent signage, so hopefully all the cities could follow the same model and you could go from one jurisdiction to the next.
If you'd like a PDF of this, I'd be happy to send it to you.
Okay. That'd be great. I don't hold my breath that that'll ever happen, but we'll see how the plan progresses.
Yeah, I know the one issue with Oakland is that they are, you know, typically adopted this, the Caltrans SG45 standard, and like many other cities are looking at moving to this Chicago standard because people are finding that the bikeway system, the numbering, isn't something that is always very useful for cyclists. I mean, I know when I bike, you know, I'm not always looking for number 15, I'm looking for my destination. So the Chicago system, where it's destination-based, does have a lot more utility than
San Francisco, interstate-based.
Exactly. Uh-huh.
Kenny, along those lines, if I was to choose between these two, I would go with the one with the arrow, not the 0.3 mile.
We actually just discussed that today.
Yeah.
What we're planning to do is that with the signs with the arrows would be used only at decision points, so at an intersection where you need to make a turn.
Sure.
And then the confirmation sign after you make the turn would be the sign without the arrow, but would have the destination, like Bart MacArthur, and then the mileage. So it's a little tweak of what you're talking about.
It might still be good to have an upward arrow.
You know, we've gone back and forth on that. If there's enough space, we may do that.
Oakland was not very supportive of the go-ahead straight arrow.
Yeah.
I don't know.
If it's beneath the locker.
You know, if our consultants see that there needs to be a reinforcement arrow, you know, maybe.
If there's really long blocks, that could be a nice big block.
Right.
Well, I guess we'll come back with more news about bike expansion parking facility as Henry gets more information.
Sure.
That'd be great. Well, we'd love to have you back with more good news. Things are moving forward with bikes and BART. Laura, I'm not sure if you had any of the numbers on the next item on the agenda.
No, I don't.
Okay, load factors for crowding and the new schedule and how that relates to bike access.
What I need is like a question that I could bring to our operations people, and I didn't really get this in a manner that I could figure out what the question was.
Well, I've heard some people mention that with the new, more frequent schedule, BART has taken shorter trains in certain places, probably so they have enough train cars. But that has made the load factors increase, and it's becoming difficult to get on certain trains at certain times that used to not be crowded. So the concern was that in shortening the trains, bicyclists are going to end up getting pushed off of trains and not have the access that they once had.
I think it's also that it seems to be working extremely well. I mean, this year for me has been great. I've been given $600 by George Bush, and I've seen my off-peak train frequency just go up fantastically. It's the best Christmas present I've ever had. And I think
that Bush did that?
No, you did that. I think more and more people are using the service now. I mean, weekends and evenings, it's just becoming very, very busy. Short trains or not, I mean, even with a 10-car train, it's getting like difficult to get your bike on.
I can take kind of a shot at that. I generally know a little about load factors anyway. We do have load factor analysis at the key points, and usually that's a Transbay 2 is the highest load factor and so forth. And we do have load factors at different points, so we can get those. If you ask us a point, we can tell you that. We can't take an individual train. We can tell you what the average is for the month for that train. But you're right. We're carrying 360,000 people a day now. We're just carrying a lot more in the off-peak. We're carrying more on Sundays. We're running actually more car hours. We run more car hours than we used to on weekdays. So we're running gangbusters right now. And we have every car out there that's available to run every day. And we have the other shops, the cars that are out there are in the shop being repaired.
Or maintained or whatever.
Yeah, being repaired or just routine maintenance. So, and what they try to do is they try to address the concept, the length of the train to meet the demand, to make equal pain for each line. That's the way of describing it. And we do have a load factor goal of 1.3 per car maximum, which means 1.3 passengers per seat. That's a fairly crowded train, as you might imagine. It'd be difficult to get a bicycle in trains that crowded.
No, the blackout is much lower than that.
Blackout is more than
1.1, I believe.
Yes,
it's blackout.
Yes.
Yes.
And that just means there are standees already. Quite a few number of standees.
So you have a specific question. Email Laura or maybe
we need to know.
We need to know what time of day or whatever. And otherwise, you can't just give a general thing.
The peak is where all your trains are out. The service improvements hasn't been made in the peak so much as the off-peak.
It's been made in the shoulders of the peak, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's the evening. It's the fact that, you know, there's now a train every 15 minutes all the way out to Bayport.
Well, yes.
All evening, all Sunday.
Well, Mike, what we can do is, I mean, I can have someone from operations come to the meeting.
Yeah.
I just have to have a little more.
Oh, yeah, no, I agree. It's a very short time.
We've had some.
What I'm trying to get at is, I don't think it's a specific question. I'm just curious on where we're going with this, because I think it's changed the way we've been working. The peak's been our big thing. We've had this peak outloading, and we can't get out of the blackout. But now what we're talking about is a very enhanced service, which I think, I'm just putting forward this to you, and I'd like to know, is attracting many more off-peak riders, weekends.
Right, because peak is
where it's not the number of trains you have. You've easily got enough trains to cover the off-peak. But it may be that you're going into maintenance problems. I just got the impression, as soon as this new enhanced service came out, that there were suddenly a lot shorter trains kicking around in the off-peak, like someone was saying, we can't maintain this now. Or, I don't know, I'm just wondering what the answer is, and whether we're going to face problems in the near future with this idea of enhanced off-peak service and weekend travel.
Well, it's a various trade-offs. It's quite a trade-offs. Mm. And they basically run every car they have. During the midday, we do take cars into the yards, the other yards, like the Concord yard or the Richmond yard, and we actually take a 10-car train, cut it into 2 4-car trains, and then they run the 4-car train in the midday, and they, toward the evening before the peak, in the evening they marry it to 8-car train, and they run it back to an 8-car train. We do that all the time as a routine operating procedure. And we like I said, we do try to equalize the load factor, essentially, so that's what we try to do.
Yeah, I think it's changing the load factor. I think, people like Caltrans, we run the bike shuttle.
Uh-huh.
Well, that may need to be changed in when it runs. I mean, it is getting the case you cannot get your bike over the city on a weekend when there's one of the many
gaps and places.
But we've got all these events as well taking place in the city. I mean, it could be the case we have to start thinking of some alternative to getting bikes across the bay on a weekend or evenings, Friday evenings. Well, that's what I'm suggesting. And I would like to know from you guys, it'd be nice to know at this meeting, and then I said, I appreciate you not knowing tonight, but where this is going to lead, I think we're going to a new sort of way of...
It sounds like some of the interest is the load factor, has it been going up at the shoulders?
It has been, clearly.
Well, we don't have to.
I guess on the other side, are you getting feedback? You're getting feedback from bicyclists saying that they can't get on trains that they used to be able to?
No.
It's just a concern that there might be.
I would more likely get feedback from customers complaining that there are bikes on crowded trains.
Yes.
I rarely get feedback. I've never actually received feedback
from bicyclists saying they couldn't get on with during
because
the night.
Because it was too crowded.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well,
that doesn't... I mean, what does that say? It's interesting what that says, actually. I mean, because I think there is an issue. And it's interesting you don't get the feedback that way. But I think what I've heard from people are saying it's just getting harder. They're feeling bad about it.
Yeah.
They're still going on.
Yeah.
Really bad.
Well, who will do it?
Because before on Saturday with plenty of room.
I think one of the things we can look at is also expanding the bike space that multi-user space, so that gives more open space on more cars. I mean, that would definitely be good. And that's, that's one where you've had great influence in the past. And so,
I'm curious if you get complaints about people that are schlepping so much luggage. I have got some pictures that are just incredible as to how many seats people with their luggage take up. And You know, there doesn't seem to be any limit to what you can bring on the BART train except bicycles. I've seen people in there with their recliner chairs that they brought on the bike on BART, you know, bought it at the garage sale or something. I mean, the bikes are banned at certain times. Anyway, Mike says, knowing which is the way this is going, if maybe there are going to be restrictions on bikes as the peak shoulders, and you don't have enough train cars, that we're going to get pushed out of those cars and traveling at those times.
You didn't say that.
Okay, that's what I wanted to hear. That was my the concern, I believe. Okay, so we've got one last item on the agenda, and that would be our position and feeling on the East Bay Greenway. And I'll just explain a little bit about the East Bay Greenway. Urban Ecology came to an East Bay Bike Coalition meeting and gave a presentation on it probably last year. And it's a project to extend something similar to the Ilani Greenway further south from somewhere in Oakland all the way down to Fremont. And I probably have some of these, I don't have the plan in front of me and don't memorize it and seeing it. But it's moving along with a lot of support. Urban Ecology, the East Bay Regional Park has added it to their master plan. A number of cities are being presented with it. And ACTEA is moving ahead. I'll just read this from a meeting. Robert Rayburn just came from the East Bay Greenway presentation at Urban Ecology to the Alameda County Transportation Improvement Authority, along with jurisdictions and agencies along the project corridor. Oakland at 18th to Hayward BART. This continuous bikeway would link 5 BART stations and consist of about 70% Class 1 path. The remaining 30% would be on-street facilities, which are most likely to be constructed first. ACTEA has environmental clearance, has tentatively agreed to be the lead agency to move the project into the environmental clearance phase. ACTEA would like to receive letters of support from each jurisdiction and agency, including BART, by June 26, so that ACTEA board can consider the project in committee and have the full board vote on the project at their July 24th meeting. The fact that they want to be the lead agency is critical, because it involves so many jurisdictions. It's good that somebody wants to step forward. So what they're asking from us is a motion that to have BART endorse the East Bay Greenway environmental certification by ACTEA. That's just for us to ask BART as a committee that they get behind researching the environmental impacts and seeing if this is a feasible project.
So they want an endorsement from BART. They don't want an endorsement from you guys.
Well, we would, I believe, vote first that we are in favor of it, and okay, in that encourage BART to also consider it.
BART,
yes,
write a letter of support.
Yes, okay. Letter of support.
Yes, we're out.
First, they have to vote.
Right. If I can just speak to that, I was also at that meeting as well that ICTA held, and actually with several of us from different BART departments. And so we do have an internal dialogue that's occurring now. The Greenway would, in many cases, use land that's either under the BART tracks, either in BART ownership or it's an easement that BART has that is actually owned by the Union Pacific Railroad. So, it would be very comparable to the Ilani Greenway. And I think the BART board actually has heard presentations from Urban Ecology before, and it's a corner record that's supporting the project. And so, I think it would be definitely in order for the task force to support.
So do you think we already are on record of supporting it, or?
Well, my understanding is the BART board would take a position of being on order of supporting it, but I think it wouldn't hurt for the task force if they felt that they wanted to support it, to make a recommendation to the board that they support moving forward to the environmental process, because this is kind of the next stage. First is the concept of the Greenway. Now it's actually doing the environmental impact report to environmentally clear the project so that it can then receive funding and be constructed.
A number of the East Bay regional park district meetings, it was mentioned about environmental justice, and there's places along that corridor that are not served by many parks, where the East Bay Regional Parks are distant. So the East Bay Regional Park director I talked to, and a lot of the staff, believe that this was a good project that they could get behind. They added it to their master plan. There might even be some of their bond money going to the project. It's a no-brainer for Safe Routes to Transit with five BART stations along the route. So this is a project that could really succeed. So does anybody on the committee want to make a motion?
Yes, I make a motion that the BART subcommittee support the East Bay region.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay, motion passes, and that's everything on the agenda, other than to mention our next meeting is Monday, August 4th at 6 p.m. here. And with that, we'll adjourn.